Hey everyone, this is James Mackey and welcome to the Breakthrough Hiring Show. Join us as we cover high-level thought leadership and step-by-step guides on how to make people a competitive advantage for your organization. I'm incredibly proud to be the CEO of Secure Vision, the sponsor of this show and the number one contract recruiting, embedded recruiting, and RPO firm. A thank you to our partners, Greenhouse, the hiring operating system for people-first companies, and GEM, the all-in-one hiring solution recruiters love. Let's go! Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Breakthrough Hiring Show. I'm your host, James Mackey. Thank you for joining us today. We're going to be talking about a lot of cool stuff, primarily focusing on early stage startups. We're going to be going through startup culture and then getting into retention programs, having tiered salaries, professional development, a lot of, you know, from a high level philosophy perspective on how we should be approaching these topics, as well as some great tips for how you can implement or optimize these things within your organization. From there, we're probably going to be getting into how to get employees engaged with employer branding on social media, LinkedIn activities. So we got an action-packed episode for you today. And I'm really excited to introduce you to our guest, Ayelet Shapiro. Ayelet, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, James, for inviting me. I'm very excited to join today.
Well, thank you. And so I hope I said your first name correctly with my American accent. Could you just say it for our audience so that we make sure we get it exactly right?
My name is Ayelet Shapiro.
Okay, great. Well, I did my best. I hope it was all right.
You did. It was great.
Okay, cool. Well, hey, before we jump into it, would you mind sharing a bit about your background with everyone?
Yeah, thank you. So my name is Ayelet. I live in Israel. I was born and raised in Israel. I started with the, actually I have a master in organizational psychology, and I started my career at big high-tech corporates. I started at Applied Materials. And moved to Amdocs, Nice. It's Israeli big global companies. And then after something like 10 years in big corporation, I moved to a smaller organization, mid-level first, and then to the startup world. So I now have 20 years experience in the high-tech organization, human resources, people area. I currently work for a very small startup called InSound. It's in the area of sound tech, very, very exciting startup with in a very exciting topic or technology or product of improving and enhancement, enhance the sound using AI and adaptive technology. So as you can understand, I have experience and learn and develop through big, medium, and small high tech organizations.
Well, yeah, I like that. I mean, our audience is a mix between startup growth stage and enterprise. So we have guests that come from a lot of different backgrounds, and I like that you've done a little bit of everything and now ending up in this, currently your VP of HR role for a startup. I think that there's a lot of insights you could provide in terms of the nuance of startup and how to maybe bring more structure to a startup environment, right? Because you've been in environments too that have a little bit more structure, and then you're walking into an earlier stage company and it's like,
yes,
okay,
big mess.
Yeah, big mess. It's like, what do you prioritize and how do you implement some of that structure, and how do you create like that cultural shift to where, and the buy-in from folks to actually follow a new process is can be challenging as well, right?
Yeah. And thank you. And yeah, I hope that I'll bring some insights and values to.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, I mean, like, just to kick us off, let's talk a little bit about startup culture and your opinion on how to be intentional about building an effective culture. I think we could start like really, you know, high level kind of thought leadership, if you will, and then we can dive into specifics and what you're focused on in order to create a thriving culture for your company.
Okay, great, sure. So I'm a big believer of the importance of building the culture and the DNA of the organization when the startup, the organization is from first stages. And I saw organizations where they created and defined their DNA when they were 60 employee, and it was still very strong and influential on 600 employees. So I really think that one of the most important parts that needs to be defined together with the entire company, or as much as possible with as much as more employees, is to define who we are, what important for us, what makes us excited, what we want to be, how we want to behave. And it's not just like five values that are written on the wall in the cafeteria, and you know, and people like maybe know how to say them, but it's actual how we want to behave, examples of what how we behave and how we don't behave, and it's really something that needs to thrive from the employees and from the management founders, etc. So I really think that this is one of the most important things that you need to do when you build a company.
For sure. And more specifically, when you're thinking about building culture, what are, for a startup, what are the most important aspects of that culture? I think one that thing that's a little bit interesting too is maybe there's some common traits of startup culture across the board, where it's like wherever you go, you're looking for specific aspects. And then maybe there's some specific things to your mission, or maybe not. I mean, I have a tendency to look at effective culture from the perspective of like growth and scale. And I don't know how often I've really thought of it from a nuanced perspective in terms of specific companies, but I'm curious to get your thoughts on what you value in terms of culture. And if you think about nuance based on the specific mission of the company you're working for.
So I think that there are general things that most of the startups should focus on in their culture. Startups are have less stability, need to change, need to do things fast. So these are pillars that needs to be in the startup culture in one way or another. To focus on agility, to focus on execution, to focus on doing things fast, being creative, being very with open communication. These are things that I believe that almost every startup needs to have it in its DNA and in its culture. And I can tell you that in the startup that I work for now, we actually understood that this is we have great people with great minds and very, very smart and passionate people. But we understood that we really need to strengthen and emphasize the agility part of our company. And this is what we discussed, and this is what we were thinking of how to increase and make it more strong. So this is one thing, and I really believe that in one way or another, these are strong pillars of a startup in the early stages. And with that, each startup needs to add its own flavors. For my startup, for example, it's music, it's sound. It's, since we are in the sound tech area, so we are looking for people who are excited about music and maybe play in a band or something like that. You don't have to be a singer or a player in order to be a good employee in our startup, but it's definitely a plus. This is one thing. The other thing that we added is the technology and people that are very excited about high-end technology. for example. Other startup will focus on customer service or about, I don't know, florist execution. Right. So I think that there are some, I hope that I'm answering your question, but yeah, I think that there are some main build blocks that are in common to most of the startup, and this is the need to act fast and to be very, very agile.
For sure. So I have two follow-up questions there. Sure. And I'm trying to think. I think since we're talking about like the last thing that you mentioned was somebody who might be interested in like specifically what you're doing with audio. Is that like, and I don't know exactly, is audio, is this, I think you said like more so music related, or is this any type of audio? Like what's the kind of focus there?
Currently it's not music related. It's, okay. It's sound, it's audio.
Okay.
And we enhance sound for a podcast. We enable content creator platforms to enhance the audio that is either recorded on their platform or okay. transferred to their platform. So in the near future we'll have the ability to improve music, singers and stuff like that.
I guess like the reason I ask is I wonder from a cultural perspective, when you're hiring, how important is it to you that people are really excited about the mission, right? I think that there's probably some people that they are excited about working for a high growth startup. They like high end tech. They might have like a mild interest in the mission, but maybe it's not like something that they maybe don't emphasize. And so I've spoken with different founder CEOs and leaders in general that have different opinions. Like some are really looking for people to see the vision of the future and to be totally bought in into the product and whatnot. Others are just like more so looking at things like agility or, that kind of startup interest or adaptability or raw intelligence that's, that can be shift focus quickly and adapt to essentially a forever changing job description. So I'm just wondering, how much do you really look for somebody to be bought into the mission and the actual product you're building versus like down the pipe startup traits?
It's a great question. It's a question I ask myself sometimes. My personal view on that is that it's a great, great plus. If I have two competent candidates and one is really engaged and excited about what we do, and he or she checked our website and tried our free trial and asked and has friends on the area and stuff like that, it's not enough. I am looking for a potential experience. It depends on the role, of course, but it's a great huge plus. And I really think that without it, without the excitement about the mission and what we do, it doesn't have to be, again, it's a plus in a sound company to have someone who is excited about music. It doesn't have to be excitement about music, but it has to be excitement about what the company is doing. And after, so yeah, I think it's not enough, but it's a great advantage. I will say that there are startup, like I'm working with a startup in the ESG, in the environmental area, and there I really think that at least in the beginning, only people who are very, very excited about environmental topics can work at this in this startup. So yeah,
sure, yeah. I think it's getting into the nuance of what the company does, and I think for probably a lot of startups, this isn't based off like pure data or anything. I'm just kind of making assumptions based off like how I would act, or I think a lot of people would act just through experience, would just be, you know, if it, the interest in the product should probably increase throughout the interview process. So it's, they do the initial screening call, they learn about the role, they learn about their point of impact, they start to learn more about the product, and it should really appeal to them, right? It's yeah. something that like the interests grow. It doesn't mean that they were seeking out that type of solution for their career. Like, oh, I want to go necessarily to a company that's solving for this specific problem. But hopefully you see like more engagement and interest toward the product as you're moving towards the final round, right?
Yeah. And it's more than interest. It's an active search as you advance in the recruitment process for information about our company and about the industry and about the technology or about the business. I really think that people who are curious and excited about what we do and are checking and learning us the same as we are learning them, they will also be curious and full of motivation during their job. So it's also an indication of how they will act not only in terms of their commitment to the specific product, but also about how they work, how they learn, how they check what they are, you know, the company that they want to join. So,
yeah, I mean, you want people that are to some extent critical about that. I mean, I always find it weird, honestly weird, and a warning sign when people aren't asking a lot of good questions about the company that they're about to join.
Exactly.
Like, and the reason I say weird is it's just like, why wouldn't you be asking these questions or looking this up? Like, you're making one of the most important decisions for your career, and you're exactly. like, you're not exactly. thinking critically about what you're doing. What
exactly? Why? And it's in the first call, it's a great surprise if someone checked, but it's not a must. But in the advanced stages, if someone is not engaged to the, you know, to check, to ask, to, as you said, it's a warning sign.
Yeah, I think honestly, there probably should be a bigger emphasis on that in the interview process. I mean, I think it's for folks that really invest in their talent strategy. They're hopefully going to have a structured interview process, scorecards, custom questions that are asked to each candidate. I think those things are important, but we should also be checking from the perspective of not only their engagement on the interview, which to me is more of like a soft skill or personality trait, quite honestly, but, you know, have they started to put some time in to really ask smart questions? Are they asking really good, engaging questions? And have they done research? Are they, you know, potentially referencing stuff that they looked on online, or do they seem to have a decent understanding? I mean, I think as you get towards the final round, it's appropriate to say something to the effect of like, you know, hey, I know you've had a few conversations. Hopefully you had a chance to look at some of the material. I would just be curious to get from your perspective what you think about our product and what we're building here. And that way too, I can fill in the blanks for you as well. So it's kind of like a two-sided approach. One, you're testing kind of engagement with a question like that. And two, it's, you can fill in any gaps. If there's a misconception or, you know, there's something that maybe they don't have clarity on, it's an opportunity to clear that up and hopefully get them even more excited. I don't think that there's necessarily enough of that going on in a lot of interview processes, even if there is structured hiring.
I agree. And I can tell you that personally for me, it's an important consideration.
Yeah, for sure. And I think too, my kind of second question based on what you were talking about culture is like agility, for instance. When you're looking for some type of behavioral trait like that, I'd be curious to, what is your way of vetting for that in the interview process to make sure that somebody is aligned with that?
It's a good question. For sure, I will ask for a lot of examples. When things didn't work, how the candidate were, you know, was planning, mm-hmm. and how he coped with it, he or she, of course, how they cope with it. So I will look for examples, for a lot of You know, first of all, I want to say that they are aware of things like that and what they learned from it. So these are the main questions that I will ask in order to check agility, to check the ability to learn, the ability to grow from mistakes and stuff like that. So so these are the areas that I will ask in order to check that. And of course, I will ask it in the, I will ask that in the reference calls. And again, I will ask how he or she reacted to changes and to challenges and, you know, to, and of course I will see the, I've seen this, it's a small startup. I'm seeing the entire recruitment process. So I can see how the candidate communicate. If we need to make changes in the calls, in the meetings, how they react. So it's also an indication. And if I'm not doing it myself, I have an indication from the talent manager representative that that speak with them. So I also look for, you know, their behavioral during the interview process.
Yeah, that's that makes a lot of sense. I think those kind of situational questions are very important to me as well. In fact, I think I do kind of like a different behavioral question for final rounds. It's not really based on historical, but I do based on like presenting a situation. Those are questions I'd like to ask too. And saying like, how would you respond in this type of situation? Like, what would be your immediate steps? I like some of the backward focus questions. I also like where the, you know, we're asking, how did you handle this? Yeah. I also like forward focus questions because they probably haven't been asked many of them before. And so it's making sure that like they're thinking on their feet, they're critical thinking. I've actually mentioned this a couple times in the podcast, but one of my favorite interview questions is to ask people, okay, if you were promoted to CEO of your current company today, what would be your top three initiatives and why? It could be something you double down on, something that you change, something that you discontinue. But I want to get a sense for what you would prioritize. And I will ask this, by the way, like usually the follow-up question I get, like I did a post on LinkedIn about this and I got a lot of like executives tuning in, like, is this for leadership roles? Like, are you like, what types of roles? I say, well, sure, but also individual contributor roles. I will ask a recruiter this, I will ask anybody this question because I learn so much about their critical thinking. I learn a lot about, you know, their self-awareness, their awareness of the environment, their awareness of the company's North Star metrics and how that cascades down to their point of impact. You know, are they more so data-driven, emotionally driven? Are they focused on the people aspect? Are they analytical? I can learn so much about like, you know, how much time are they going to spend collecting data, you know, who are they pulling in versus executing, right? There's just so much that I can glean from a question like that. And I, you know, in terms of personality traits, behavior, initiative, agility, communication, strategic thinking, you know, those kind of business acumen, ambition, even when they're setting goals, are they setting this kind of like mediocre, like let's move the needle 2%, or are they looking for, you know, we have this mission and we want to accomplish this. So if we could, if we, you know, this is something that we do well, we should double down on, or I've noticed there's a gap here. And I think if we put more emphasis on that, we could get more leverage, you know, that kind of stuff. I've always loved that question. It's helped me a lot, quite honestly.
I think it's a great question. I'm going to use it for sure. Referring to that, I sometimes give example or case studies that happened to us in the company. And I ask the candidate how they would have reacted to that or what they would do. So it's also a similar question that you can get a lot of insights from.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, this is a good segue into, let's talk about, okay, so we talked about a bit about like culture, traits that we're looking for. We've talked about how to implement that. So now we're moving forward to when folks are onboarding, they become employees. I would like to talk a little bit about talent development and retention. I think one specific topic or example that you provided is hiring, for instance, in the case of hiring junior engineers, right? And bringing junior engineers onto the team. One thing that you mentioned was really important to you is providing kind of a growth path and how to make sure that you retain folks that you possibly need to level up in several senses of the word to retain them. And I think that this is a perfect example because these are probably, if you're hiring junior staff that's accumulating knowledge quickly, you probably have to be agile, right? You have to move quickly to ensure that you can provide growth opportunity for them to stay. I feel like if you can solve for this type of situation, then retention strategies, you're also building out just an effective one for roles where maybe this isn't a case where you have to rapidly adjust a growth role. So would you mind giving us some thoughts on how you think about retention strategy and keeping folks engaged?
Yeah. So there are many things that are, crucial for retention and for employee motivation and engagement. The example that you mentioned about the junior, actually it started in the previous company that I worked for, where we had a challenge to first to recruit juniors because their salary expectations were much more higher than we thought that their experience level is worth. And then after we actually recruited the juniors, it was hard to retain them. We invested a lot in their training and development. And after 1 or 2 years, they were much more experienced. Their value, both to the company but to the market, was much, much higher. And we lost many of them because we couldn't increase their salary fast enough in order to adjust to their higher training level. And it was a big challenge. And the managers told me, no way, we are not recruiting more juniors. We are not investing so much time in training people that will leave us after we'll finish the training. So we actually built a special program for juniors, engineers, software engineers. And we created a different merit cycles and budget and communication for this team of juniors that was actually communicated to the candidates before they signed. So we were able to show them, okay, this is how you start with us, and we will invest in your training, etc., etc. And if you will be good after 6 months, this is where you can get to in terms of salary and terms. And after 1 year, this is where you can get to, and in the stages of 6 months. And then after 2 years, this is where we will bring you to. Of course, if you will continue to show a high performance, and then you're going to the regular cycle of merits and the compensation that the company had. And it was actually really good because the managers believe that they have the tools to attract and retain talents. It was a great way to communicate to candidates and to speak with them and to build their development plans, because the candidates knew, or the new employees knew exactly when are we going to examine their performance, what they can expect in terms of their both development, what the objectives of their training, and also how they will be compensated. So this is an example that I built together with a comp and ben expert that we had in the company. And it was a great success in order to actually build a strong team of juniors who after 1 year or 2 years were really in the high level of the engineering team, not only for juniors, but they were really growing and developing fast. So I believe that you refer to this example. So this is a very structured example of how we created a challenge and we created a specific solution for this team. I really think that engagement is and retention is a challenge, but you need to really ask what is exactly the specific challenge to retain. Is it managerial skills that needs to be strengthened? Is it a compensation challenge? Is it development and learning? And for each team, in each state, it's a different challenge. So you cannot have one retention plan for the entire company. And for sure, you cannot have the same retention plan for each company.
Yeah. This is a really great point. So I wrote down actually several kind of follow-up notes and pointers based on this. Really, really good stuff. I mean, again, I think it's what I really love about this example or situation that you solve for is that it's a very difficult one. It's probably more difficult than if you're bringing in more experienced engineers than you just have off the bat. Like it's more of a consistent role that's not as short to midterm growth focused as one of the primary selling points, where you might have a traditional path of a year to 2 years or longer. So that's why I really like this example. A couple of things I would like to slow down on is, of course, like in the startup world and the tech world in general, there's always going to be a shortage of engineers and good people to hire. And I think it's also looking at it from the perspective of, when we provide a good candidate experience and it's going to lead to better candidate engagement, it's going to lead to an overall better quality of hire, because a lot of startups and growth stage companies do not have this as clearly defined. And it's a way to really stand out. I think the other aspect of it too is, well, not only it's also, as you mentioned, it's a better quality experience for the hiring managers, right? Like you're making their job a little bit easier. They're going to have better talent on their team. They're going to feel more confident in achieving the goals that they need to. So I think that that's really great as well. Like we have to remember our leaders are also employees and we have to do what we can to make them happy. I think the other point that I wanted to make is a lot of startups and growth stage companies have this mentality of, we're a startup, we're a growth stage. We don't have time to put these programs in place. And I think that that's, and I'm sure you agree, it's obviously you do. It's a really short-sighted, non-logical way to think about it, simply because it really doesn't take too much time to think through this stuff. You can, if you sit down and you focus on it, it's not rocket science. It requires focus. It requires some collaboration amongst the leadership team into understanding the hiring manager's needs, to understanding our budget, to understanding these types of things. But if you can increase the quality of talent that's coming on your team, if you can increase retention, you're ultimately going to save so much time and you're going to be able to have more value creators that are going to help you achieve your North Star metrics. There's a massive opportunity cost. It might be a little harder to measure on a dollar basis. I think it's certainly worth going through the motion to try to get buy-in if you need to from other executives, but it's so much more effective. And I don't think it's like people understand that. I did a post on LinkedIn the other day where I was like, I kind of was making a joke, like, imagine going to a prospective customer and saying, hey, we're a young and scrappy company with no onboarding processes or resources to help you be successful. We're looking for customers that are going to thrive in that environment. And like, we just think about how stupid that sounds, right? And yet when we look at talent strategy for startups and growth stage, that's basically how we're, a lot of companies are approaching it.
Yeah. I agree that as much as we can structure and the onboarding and the recruiting process and give the managers, the hiring managers, the tools to feel confident that they know what to promise and how to reach attract the talent. It will give the managers confidence, and it will give the candidates confidence that we know what we are doing and that we are a great choice. I will also say that, as you said, companies, and I can understand that, you know, people have, or managers are afraid of bringing, you know, too much, too many juniors aboard. But I think that really, I believe personally that bringing people with potential, of course, you have to have a few, not pillars with the experience, with the knowledge, but if you are bringing people with the eager to learn and to develop and that have the potential, even not the experience, and you build really structured development plan and training plan, it you'll have the great employees, and they will be experienced in no time, and the energy and the result that you can get is our, you know, limitless.
Yeah, I think it's in the startup world. I think the majority of the roles that we're going to hire for, this is sort of an arbitrary number. It's not a direct statistic. They're a direct like data point. But this is more just through experience again. I usually say like, let's hire people that have around 75% of the experience we're looking for. And it's the 25% that they don't have. The 25% they don't have is why they're going to accept our offer. Yeah. Because if we're hiring the growth-minded people, that's really what's going to drive them. And it's also another kind of theory, if you will, that's proven us very well. I mean, what I should do is actually collect the data on that and see how close to 75% it really is. But I think it's probably pretty damn close. I think that I recently was on a podcast where a C-level actually kind of brought up, he's like, well, yeah, you want some roles where it's that. And then you want for other roles, you want somebody who's been there, done that, highly experienced. They get excited about the nuance of a new type of product, but they've done like, you know, 95% of it. And that's true. I mean, there's certain C-level positions or VP positions where you don't want the person who's done 50%, 75% of the job. And I get that too.
For sure. It's a mix, and you need to have this mix. And as I said, you need to have these really experienced people who can teach and who can build the infrastructure in order to build people who are more juniors and with potential. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think as startup companies, like growth stage, we have to get out of the mindset of, yes, we want people that are agile and adaptable. We do. And also, not being an enterprise company is an excuse to be unorganized and to not be thoughtful about our process. I mean, it's kind of weird how that pervades so much of startup culture and this like, hey, it doesn't matter if anything, you know, a lot of this stuff is not well organized. We're looking for people that get it. It's like, okay, you're competing for the most competitive, smartest people in the world. Like the two most competitive industries are tech and academia. Like these folks are smart. The ones that are actually good are going to be very critical on your environment. And they're going to adopt the mindset of like, how you do one thing is how you do everything.
Definitely. I agree.
Yeah. There's just not enough people to out there to take that mindset.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, that's just my thoughts. And even like in a employer-driven market, which, you know, apparently we're more so in now, I think there is a lot of good talent out there that you know, might be kind of floating around. I would just say that again, if you want the best of the best, they're always going to have the most options. And I know a few A players that are actually unemployed right now, but the only reason they're unemployed is because they are being very thoughtful about their next move. Like the best people that I know, a lot of them had good severances, they've been in tech for years, they have some money saved up. And they're not going to jump into so they're even the folks that are the best that are unemployed right now, they're still being incredibly critical. Like I know a couple of people that are A players that have been out for like 6 months, and they're just,
and these are the people that you want to bring, and these are the people that you don't want to compromise for people that don't have a choice. You want the people that you will choose, and they will choose you, and you have to be very organized and from very early stages. Because if you're not, it's first, it's not only we are speaking about people, employees, retention and recruitment, but also for business, for customers. I can say you cannot build a business and later scale if you are not doing very, very organized and planned and structured from the very beginning. So yeah,
right.
With us that we spoke about agility, it's very, very important, but also the ability to emphasize quality and be very, very precise.
Yeah, I think that really hits the nail on the head. We need to elevate our thinking, be more thoughtful about this. And there's just a lot of fallacious thinking when it comes to running people organizations and, you know, what tier people should really be. I mean, on my board of advisors, I have Steve Cadigan. He was the first chief HR officer of LinkedIn and helped scale them from 300 people to 3,000. He also had been VP of HR for Electronic Arts and, you know, a fair amount of other like pretty well-known organizations. And you know, he was mentioning on the C-level conversations and with the board, the first thing that they would jump into is people.
Yeah.
Like that was always, and if they could get to the other stuff, they would, but people always came first. And if you hear from a lot of the most successful entrepreneurs, I'm not talking about like mid-tier, I'm talking about the best of the best. They will talk about the importance of getting the absolute best people. There's a LinkedIn influence that I actually quite respect. And I think overall his content is the most valuable on LinkedIn. However, he did a post recently where he was talking about how he used to think, you know, go to market was the most important thing for companies to start on, and that no individual person is greater than go to market. And now he's starting to realize that, you know, after developing a go to market, people are actually the most important aspect. To which I responded, it's like, well, who's developing your go to market plan? Like, so he understood that, of course, people are very important, but there's that other layer where you have to dig deeper, and it's understanding that literally every single go to market plan, every single product idea and initial kind of groundwork is created by people. Whether it's the founder or not, we have to remember that literally people are at the very core of everything we're doing. And maybe by 2045, when the average AI academic specialist thinks that we're going to have general AI, maybe at some point that'll change. But you know, for now, people are at the core of all of these decisions. And I think it's just very important for leaders to remember that.
I think that leaders currently, most of them understand that, but yes.
I think they do. I think there's just tiers, right? There's tiers to competency. I think that there's a lot of folks coming from a technical background. I think sometimes companies have to learn the hard way a little too often. And hopefully your product and go-to-market is so strong that you can F up and make mistakes and still have so much leverage from what you're building that you can do that. But yeah, something, I just think it's a good reminder, right?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Well, so we have a few minutes left. I would love to jump into employee engagement when it comes to employer branding, being active on social media. How do you get buy-in from the team? And then also, like, one of the things that I'm always concerned about is I know my team is busy, and so I don't want them to feel like they need to spend a bunch of time on social media promoting us. So I'm just kind of wondering how you get engagement and how you try to balance where it doesn't end up taking too much of their time, or it doesn't make them feel stressed that, oh, I have this, I got to do marketing in addition to my, you know what I mean? Like, how do you manage that?
So, what I'm trying to do and I did in the past is always, you know, I have my team or a social media or marketing person who is, you know, writing posts and concentrate on our appearance in the social media. But I always want to add to it, you know, employees' involvement. And I do it in special projects or special themes or something like that. For example, we in one of the companies that I work for, employees were very stressed out and they really worked a lot. And we looked for ways to to support our employees. And one of the things that we did is give them a budget for a vacation and a few vacation days in addition to their regular vacation days. And we did ask them, we didn't make them do it. It wasn't, a must in order to get the budget, but we did ask them to post their best vacation a photo on LinkedIn. And we did say that out of all the photos that will be published, we will choose the winner and he will or she will get additional budget for a vacation. And people posted like they were so grateful and they really appreciated the entire initiative. So they posted things that I wouldn't even dream to ask them to write. The competition was only on the photo, and they had great, amazing photo. But it was not only the photos, but also what they wrote and how they, and it was fun for them to tell to the world what their company did for them. So I think that things like that, for example, if we are a sound or music company, do some project, ask the employees to write about their connection to music and how they started to play the instrument that they are playing. And then again, give the best post tickets to a great band show that is going to be this year or something like that. Always things that are involving the employees, but in a fun way, in a related to a specific theme, not just please share this post or something like that. It's important. We should ask them to share. But if we are doing these initiatives, employees are really engaged to contribute to our social platform appearance. Once we did a donation to one of our employees who was in a really special need, and again we encouraged our employees to take a challenge, a 1 month challenge. Like I decided to be a vegetarian for 1 month, and I asked my my friends over Facebook, etc., to donate to this important reason. And I promised to be a vegetarian for 1 month. And the money that was raised, the company, of course, matched it. And it all went to this employee. And again, employees were so motivated and so appreciative about what the company is doing, and that it's in order to help one of them and stuff like that, that they really wrote great, great stuff about the company in their post. And this is not what we asked them for. This is what they wanted to write, because of course it was a little bit of a competition who will raise more money and stuff like that. So it was also fun, but it was for such a good cause. And again, employees were really, really, really engaged for it. So I think that these are the most effective ways to create employees engagement to our social appearance and brand.
Yeah, I think that's really smart. In fact, I think I have to revisit my strategy here at Secure Vision. I think what we do primarily is I ask them to post about the podcast if they have time. Like, hey, I really appreciate just kind of sharing the word, but they're happy to do it because they want to help. But I think there's probably ways to make it more exciting so that they can write more posts, share more of themselves, and even do more. Actually, that's going to help their personal brand as well. Yeah. Like, let's do it in such a way where it's beneficial to the company, where they're also building personal brands that are going to be incredibly valuable to their career as well.
Yeah. It's always the two ways.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's when there's that alignment, which is perfect. Anyways, look, I we're coming up on time here. I've had a really good, doesn't it fly?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, that's what I love about the podcast, right? It's sure as hell beats looking at a spreadsheet. And you know, it's pretty cool to be able to give back to the community and help guide talent strategies. Like pretty much every week now, I'm getting a DM on LinkedIn from an executive that's tuning in and is saying, like, hey, I dropped this episode on a Slack channel, or, you know, we're currently implementing, or we changed this, or we love the show. So it's really cool to get that feedback and know that it's actually making a difference out there.
Great. I hope that I was able to contribute, and I really enjoyed our time. So
yeah, I hope so too. Fingers crossed. Hopefully, I'm kidding. I know that this I know this episode is incredibly valuable. So, well, anyways, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, and have a great summer.
Yeah, you as well. And for everybody tuning in, we appreciate your support, and we'll talk to you next time. Take care. Thank you for tuning in to the Breakthrough Hiring Show. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode and gained a lot of valuable insights to help guide your talent strategy. I also want to say thank you to my team at Secure Vision for making the show possible. Secure Vision is the number one embedded recruitment provider, and we are a 3-time category leader on G2. Secure Vision partners with over 150 companies to provide on-demand recruiters who specialize in either tech, revenue, or G&A. For more information, you can visit securevision.io. For more content, you can follow me on LinkedIn at James Mackey or on Twitter at James Mackey DMV. We've dropped links in the description. If you want to be on our show or have any topics you'd like for us to cover, reach out at breakthroughhiring.io. We really appreciate your support with reviews on Apple Podcasts. And lastly, make sure to tune in every Tuesday and Thursday for a new episode. See you next time.